Chapter 6 Letters Home About the Children. The Lord gave us 6 healthy children, 5 boys and a girl. The youngest and the oldest were 20 years apart. Sometimes it seems that we raised 2 families because of the difference in ages. Dennis was born in October 1942, and we sailed for Africa in July of 48. Jim was born in Nashville, Tennessee, in March that same year. He was just 4 months old and still in his carrying basket when we headed for the Sudan. The following year, Dave was born at Akobo, just 14 months apart, and they grew up having great times together. I recall how they played basketball at the Schutz American School in Alexandria, Egypt. They had quite an advantage in yelling their strategies using the Aniwak language. No one ever broke their code. Carol Joy was born in the Mission Hospital in Dembidola, Ethiopia, in 1953. I'll never forget how overjoyed we were to have a little girl. But I'll save that story until later. Again, 14 months later, running true to our pattern, Mark was born at Akobo. How he arrived is worthy of being told later in greater detail. And then to give us an even half dozen, 6.5 years later, our little caboose arrived when Paul was born at home, when we were living at Peewar. By road from Akobo to Malakal. Early letters give us an idea of what was involved to get by road between Akobo and Malakal, from which all our supplies were bought or routed, when gotten from Khartoum in the north. A letter written February 22, 1949, written from Malakal, says, Dennis and I are leaving this afternoon about 3 o'clock for Akobo on a merchant's truck. We will have to ride on the back of it on top of a load of cement. Imagine doing that over that trail for 230 miles. We will stop about halfway at an Arab merchant center. Here we will be staying over for 2 days. We have 1 blanket with us and 4 water canteens, and some soup, and some cookies, so I think we'll get along all right. I have matches in my pocket for a fire, and the camp cooking set I bought in Minneapolis. This will indeed be a rugged trip, traveling all night, but it will be a most interesting experience. It will be a little hard on Dennis, but we must get back to work, and we will both be able to rest after getting home. I have my gun and field glasses with. So it should be exciting. Dennis attends school in Addis. April 27, 1949, quoting from the letter. Dennis and I came in on one of the merchant's trucks again. First leg of Dennis's trip to boarding school in Addis Ababa. We had a faster and better trip, leaving Akobo about 3 p.m. on Monday and arriving here in Malakal the next day about the same hour. We had an interesting trip and rather enjoyed it, although it was very hot during the day. The temperature was around 105 again. I shot a tiang, so the fellows had meat. Another letter dated May 8, 1949. Dennis is now in Addis. He left on the plane last Thursday. Mary Ewing was on that same flight and looked after him. I was so sorry I had to return home 3 days before the planes left, so that I could not see him off. We had not thought it would be so hard to have him gone, but truly, it has been lonely with him absent. I don't know how many times each day that we don't mention him. It is so early to have him go, but we know he is in a good school and that it is really better for him. We miss him so, though. He always had so much spark and pep and was much fun. I don't know. But I think the sacrifice of one's children is perhaps the most deep, cutting, and trying experience for us missionaries. It is especially hard for Levina as she misses him so much. But gradually now the intensity of it is diminishing, and we are reconciled to it. I know that if we truly cast ourselves upon the Lord, His grace is sufficient even for this. If only He keeps well and strong now while away. It is when they are sick that they need a mother's loving care so much. And then another letter commenting about Dennis at school dated July 4th, 1949. Dennis writes that he's having a grand time in school. He is well and happy. Letters for Grandpa and Grandma, dated June 24, 1949. Jimmy is still as strong and pretty as ever. He just loves to sing and to have us sing to him. He is really quite an affectionate and loving baby. When he finds a slip of paper on the floor, he sits down and starts rocking back and forth and sings. He sings Jesus over and over again. He's learned this because we sing Jesus Loves Me, This I Know to him so often. Whenever I saw boards in the house, he either stands and keeps time with the saw or sits down and rocks back and forth keeping time with the music of the saw. This week, Jimmy has had a case of sore eyes, which are so common out here. They are caused by the flies which carry infections from the villages. He was awfully crabby, and they are so painful. For several days, they were stuck shut for more than half of the time. It was so pitiful to see him sitting there trying to eat like a blind baby. But they are nearly better now, and he is better-natured, too. End of letter. For his second year away from home, Dennis traveled with other mission children to Assyut in Egypt. They were chaperoned by one of the missionary wives or families. These trips were correlated with vacation times, which incidentally missionaries were required to take during those years. The weather and isolation dictated the wisdom of this mission regulation. One year we took our holiday somewhere inside the Sudan, and the next year we had to leave the country and get away to where the climate was more favorable to good health. Growing up in Africa. In many ways, our children had a great time growing up in the Sudan. They loved to fish with the native children. They learned some of the ways the Anuak children had fun without toys. They learned to make things from sticks, grass, and mud. It was great sport for them to make small mud balls, attach them to a willowy stick, and sling them at birds to chase these dura birds out of the ripening dura. They'd sit up on the tall stands in the middle of the ripening corn and have a great time with the Anuak boys and girls, who were up there from morning until night. Sometimes they'd get a little rough, too, and have a mud ball fight to see who could make the other person run first. We were always concerned that someone might get a mud ball in the eye. The boys enjoyed their pellet guns and were fantastic shots. Many a rat suffered at their hands. They'd spend hours hunting for mourning doves and come home with up to a half a dozen, which Levina prepared and put on the table for that essential ingredient for another of her delicious home-cooked meals. The boys learned to eat like the Anuak boys, too. We weren't so excited about that because we knew how easily dysentery and diarrhea could follow. Once when I came in the backyard, Denny, who was then about 6.5 years old, was sitting beside a little fire he had made. His legs were wide apart, and he was holding a partially eaten fish. Just like the Anuaks, he was eating around the intestines and enjoying the meat. He looked at me with a guilty grin and captivating smile that I shall never forget. We were still pretty strict about those things those first months. But seeing his endearing smile, even though tainted by disobedience, didn't make discipline any easier. And then there was the time when I stepped out of the back door at Peabor. I was going down the back path there, under the shade of a small bush, sat Dave, eating a tiny dura bird about the size of a sparrow. He had plucked the feathers, most of the feathers, that is, off and roasted it in a little fire that he had going there. He looked up at me, and with the most satisfying smile, he said with his childish lisp, "Sweet, Dad, sweet," which, by the way of interpretation, is "Sweet, Dad, sweet." He was translating back from Merle into English. When David was born, the Anuaks called him Little Akobo, and when he started growing up, they began calling him David Akobo. When Carol was born, they gave her the name Awili, which means the one who changed things around. She had broken the pattern from boys to our having a girl. Her older brothers still call her Awili sometimes as a playful expression of love and admiration, an indication of how glad they are to have such a lovely sister. Jimmy and the Aladdin Lamp. The children really loved the single missionary gal who lived at Pequot with us after she came back from furlough. Having been there alone with their dad and mom for 15 months, they were glad for a new face. Joan Jelic had a way with kids, and when she'd come over for a meal with us, the conversation around the table was animated and frequently hilarious. One evening, Jimmy and Dave were so excited that they monopolized the conversation, and we couldn't seem to get a word in edgewise. Finally, in good fun, I said, "All right, now it's time for the adults to have a chance to talk. I want you children to keep silent unless you have something really special to say. But before you can talk, you have to raise your hand to get permission." Everything seemed to have calmed down reasonably well, when Jimmy, who had had his hand up for some time and wasn't being recognized, began to sing softly, "I see something, I see something, I see something." He kept this up without our paying adequate attention. When finally we gave him the attention he should have had all along, under terms of the conditions playfully laid down, we saw that he was pointing to the Latin lamp. It was gradually going up in smoke as the wick became blacker and blacker. We had a good laugh and knew that Jimmy succeeded in having had the last word. What fun we had as a family when children were small and not some 2,000 miles away in school in Egypt. The pain of those empty beds that first night after the children left for school has seared its way into our memories. The utter desolation and loneliness of those first nights were hard on Levina with a mother's heart. But we all felt it, even the little ones who weren't yet old enough to go away to school. And then there were the letters we exchanged with our children. The school had a regulation that every child had to spend part of Sunday afternoon to produce a letter in an envelope for their parents. I suspect most kids would have written in any case, but those letters were very precious for both parents and the children. We shared many deep and meaningful conversations in those exchanges. Some of the letters received produced joy and laughter. Dennis was always small for his age. He was just a little guy when he was in the third grade at Assiut in Egypt. One of his letters was unforgettable. It had only a couple of sentences, but they got our attention. He wrote, "Please write Miss Duff a hot letter and tell her to stop opening my mail." After a good laugh over it, we thought an appropriate letter in response would be in order. Other letters brought concern and pain, like when one of the boys would write about some perceived injustice in the classroom because of what a teacher had said. The painful incident would be described in detail to gain our sympathy and support. But we could sense that if we had been there, we could have helped the child appreciate some of the other factors that hadn't been taken into account. Had we been there, we could have helped our child understand, and the pain would have been less severe. But by the time this kind of letter came, it was far too late to be of much help. A month would have passed by. By this time, they would again be having fun with friends about which they normally wrote. Children's escapades and accidents. When Dave was about 3.5 years old, he gave us the fright of our lives. It was late afternoon, and Levine and I were enjoying the gradual cooling off of the day as we wandered through the garden, commenting on how the various vegetables were faring. During this time, David had climbed up on the steps that led up to the base where the water barrels were positioned. These steps allowed the water carrier to make his way up there with his 5-gallon tins to fill the barrels morning and evening. Water from the barrels ran through a lead pipe into the house to give us inside water. We had a faucet over the sink in the kitchen and one in the bathroom and a shower. All showers were cold, and they really felt that way too after the heat of the day. This particular afternoon, Dave had been playing quite contentedly on the steps and having a great time. However, during one of our frequent glances in his direction, we saw him sitting on the ground, and he seemed to be in distress. He had fallen off the 3rd or 4th step, landing on his small toy crane, striking it right across his windpipe. It seemed innocent enough, but almost immediately as the swelling began, it was apparent that the air passage was rapidly closing and he was having difficulty getting enough air. We really didn't know what to do. We carried him into the house and put him on bed and prayed that the Lord would cause the swelling to stop. We also contemplated driving him to Pebor, some 90 miles south, where Dr. Rood was stationed. Of course, that would have been to no avail if the swelling had continued. Lillian Heiskens, our Kobo nurse, was soon there, and she calmly kept a careful eye on him, and together we committed Dave to the Lord's merciful, saving power. We look back on that experience with great thanks to God for his intervention and how he cared for Dave and taught us afresh how totally dependent we were upon him. Letters home are cute, telling how Dave viewed discipline in kindergarten every day. November 9, 1954. David is in kindergarten with his mother teaching. There are rather frequent times when he shows up with, "I'm sick of school, Mother. Let's not have school today." He loves to play out with the Anuak children, roasting pigeons, fish, and corn in typical Anuak fireplaces. He speaks Anuak as if it were his native tongue. End of quote. When David was a little older, he and the Jordan boys, Jack and Dave, had great times together. They had an interesting debate going on between them as to whose dad's dog was the strongest. One day these boys egged the two dogs on, each side hoping to prove that the other was wrong. I suppose they bit off more than they could handle. Before this inconclusive, furious contest was over, the dogs had had the last bite. Dave came home by way of the clinic with stitches and a clean white bandage around his leg. He'd gotten just a little too close to the action. A prominent scar reminds him of how much fun it was before he tried to make sure that his dad's dog would win. Jim and Dave had a lot of fun together. Being just 14 months apart, they were almost like twins. One afternoon when Jim and Dave were young lads, 11 and 12 years of age, they gave us a good scare, too. Dave had a way of playing tricks on us with his delightful sense of humor, and so we weren't always sure whether he was to be taken seriously or not. I was in the office inside our house at Pebor. We lived in what was known then as the Hostetter House. They had lived there until Paul and his family were expelled, the first missionaries on whom the axe fell, with everyone else still to follow. Missionary houses tended to be identified by the name of the first person who had occupied it. On that afternoon of which I am writing, Dave and Jim came into the office and asked if they could chop some wood. We always had to chop dry branches and logs for the wood-burning cook stove. Normally, an Anuak or a Murley was engaged to do this, but the boys thought it would be fun and a great experience to chop a little wood. I looked at their shorts and bare feet and had a moment of concern as to the wisdom of their doing this without shoes, but gave it no more than a passing thought and gave them my okay to go ahead. My parting words were, "Be sure you boys are careful not to chop yourselves with those bare feet." With that, they left, happy with the permission granted status under which they could begin. They weren't gone more than 15 minutes when Dave came back in alone with the words, "Dad, Jim chopped his foot." I thought he was kidding and responded with, "You've got to be kidding." It was no joke. Jim had already made his way over to the mission hospital, and when I arrived, Dr. Mary Smith was busy stitching up a 3-inch gash running right down the entire length of the foot just off center. A quarter of an inch on the angle of the gash, and he'd have severed the tendon. Again, our prayer of thanks took on special meaning. We were reminded again of how utterly dependent we were upon the Lord's loving, protecting care. It was a painful experience, but everyone learned important lessons out of it. Dave and I were reminiscing recently about some of the boys' experiences in Africa. At one point, he said to me, "Dad, do you remember that big Nile perch we picked up that day when we were coming from Pebor to Akobo with that old launch?" That was a 3-day trip in an old diesel launch that had 4 bunks in it. Dave went on, "Do you remember how we put that huge fish on the top and how the juice from the fish oozed out and ran over our jackets? Boy, how they smelled, and we couldn't get that terrible dead fish smell out of them. Dad, that's one of our experiences you've got to include in your book." Our grandchildren have listened to many a story from our years in the Sudan and Ethiopia. Once, while sitting around the table with Jim's family, I got to telling about some of our fabulous experiences in Africa. At one point, Doug, then about 11, pipes up and says, "Grandpa, you ought to write a book. It'd be a bestseller." Would that this young man had prophetic blood flowing in his young veins. Seriously, one of the reasons for writing this book is so that our children and grandchildren will be able to recall some of their incredible experiences and praise God for His marvelous, loving care as we work together for Him in the heart of Africa. What a privilege it was for our whole family, even though some experiences were painful and threatening. Looking back, we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that God, who called us, mercifully protected us and enabled us to complete the task that He had entrusted to us.